The Capital Investment Committee for April 8th is called to order. Members, we do have a quorum. Chair Franzen, can I have a motion to approve the minutes from April 3rd? Chair Franzen has a motion to approve the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, several weeks ago, Chair Franzen and Representative Hansen asked to see if we could get the Attorney General's office to come in and talk about the PFAS litigation that has been, you know, going on or happened at the federal level. And so today we have Mr. Oliver R. Larson, Assistant Attorney General from the Minnesota AG's office, to come and give us an update. And with that, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Representative Lee. My name is Oliver Larson. I'm an Assistant Attorney General. I manage the Environmental and Natural Resources Division at the Attorney General's office. I did not come here with a lot of prepared remarks. I understand that you folks have some questions. But in terms of an update on the federal litigation, one thing I would encourage all of you to do, there was a presentation made by Mr. Serto, an attorney who works for me, last session. I think it was on February 24th. There's a lot of good information. I viewed that in preparation for today, and for the most part, it's still accurate. In terms of updates I can provide vis-a-vis that presentation, at the time that presentation was made, in terms we're talking about the federal multi-state litigation that's in South Carolina, the 3M piece of that settlement had not yet been approved by the court, and it now has. That's probably the most significant thing that has happened. That said, that process is now in kind of an extended period of review. And so what we have is essentially, I don't know how familiar people are with the litigation, but there is a massive, sprawling piece of litigation that's going on in the federal court of South Carolina involving lots of different types of claims related to PFAS. The settlement that I think this committee is primarily interested in is the one that affects local units of government who operate water systems. So that is the piece that there were two different settlements, one by DuPont, one by 3M. In total, kind of $12 to $13 billion that was made available to these water systems through these two settlements. There was an opt-in, opt-out procedure, so communities could decide whether they wanted to opt into the settlement or opt out of it. I do not have a list, and I'm not sure that there is a list that would tell us, like, in Minnesota, which communities have opted in or opted out. What I can tell you is that there were about 12,000 water systems that were eligible under that settlement, and about 900 of them ended up opting out. So about 7% of the water systems opted out, and so the majority stayed in. The situation with that is essentially there's going to be a pool of money that's going to be paid out over about 10 years, but there's going to be a very complex claims administration process where these entities have to submit information to the claims administrator, and then decisions are going to be made on essentially allocating the available funds across these communities over the course of 10 years. And so that's the process that's still underway. When I checked the docket this week, there really wasn't much of an update in terms of where that process stands. My understanding is that the first checks probably won't be cut until 2026. So that's kind of a brief update I can give you on that particular lawsuit. If you've got more specific questions, I can try to answer them. I will say we're not involved in that lawsuit. We don't have, you know, a client that's involved in that. So what we know is basically through observing the docket and talking to some of the other interested stakeholders.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming, Attorney General Larson. A couple of questions on the opt-ins. So we have a series of cities that are coming to us with requests. Would they be able, if they're asking for money for PFAS, would we be able to ask them if they've opted in, if they've opted out, and what they would be receiving? Would they know that at this point?
Okay, so a couple parts to that question. So let me take the first one first. Yes, there's absolutely no reason that you cannot ask these communities whether they opted in. It's not secret information. It's not privileged information. It certainly is something I think that you all would want to know where they had opted in. As to the second piece, do they know how much money they're going to receive? I think the answer as we sit here today is no. That said, there was, as they were making their decisions on whether to opt in, opt out, there was essentially like, I don't know what you want to call it, like a a widget on the internet where they could go in and put in some information and get an estimate of what they might hope to recover if the settlement was approved. And what I can tell you is that I would be shocked if there's any community that's going to get more than about 10% of what they need to build the projects that they're contemplating. And based on the information that we received last year, I think a more typical percentage is going to be like 3 to 5%. So somebody with like a $50 million project might get $1.5 to $2 million, something like that, towards their project. So as you all think about it, if the hope is that the multi-state settlement is going to be a major source of funding, that's probably not what's going to happen.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then following up on that, that is with the national 3M. The national DuPont one is a smaller amount. Is that correct?
Correct. I'm sorry. I should let you recognize. Yes, that is correct, Representative Hansen. That there are two different pieces, although they work much the same, and it is possible. Sometimes, I mean, there are different kinds of PFAS. That's one thing I would focus on. And so, it is possible if there are certain types of PFAS that can be identified to a specific manufacturer. And there's some types of PFAS that were manufactured by lots of different folks. And so it is possible that depending on what types of PFAS are appearing in your system, you might be in the DuPont settlement, you might be in the 3M settlement, you might be in both. But the results, I think, are largely going to be the same. There's going to be essentially a small, I don't want to call it pennies on the dollar, but 3 to 5% kind of payout across these two settlements would be my expectation.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then a follow-up. So we have the Minnesota settlement with 3M. And how does that play into the national? Does the national take that into account? And then a follow-up of how much money is left in the Minnesota settlement?
Mr. Larson.
Yes, that's a complex question. And so I'm going to try and answer it at a high level. And what I will say is that I think there would be an expectation that communities who are having systems built out using the 3M settlement funds would not be eligible to participate in the multi-state settlement in South Carolina.
Chair Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and then the second question of, with the Minnesota settlement, how much is left and what are the restrictions on that?
Mr. Larson.
So let me say, I think that's probably a better question for PCA, because I think they've been obviously involved in a very extensive effort to take the funds that are available to allocate them to different projects. And then there were both temporary projects that kind of bridged the period in which there was planning. And then there are permanent projects that are now sort of on the precipice of getting funded and built. And so I don't have the details on exactly how much money is left to do these projects. What I will say is my expectation, I think it's PCA's expectation as well, that the full amount of the 3M settlement will be essentially occupied by public water works projects in the East Metro. The need exceeds the amount of funds that are probably available out of the 3M funding.
Chair Hansen, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is here, so we'll have the Deputy Commissioner come by and answer the question. Welcome, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed to answering the question.
Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Adelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. In terms of the 3M settlement, we have done projections. Our last projections are in the fall. But we estimate the funds will run out because of capital projects and ongoing operation projects that are already planned in fiscal year 2027. We are doing an update. We'll be presenting that to the work groups of communities in the spring in May. So we'll have updated numbers. Those numbers do change. We have projects in various states. Some are in bids already, very firm numbers, and some are early planning, so we have very soft numbers that are estimates. So those numbers do fluctuate a little bit, but the end of the settlement is in sight.
Chair Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Kadelka. Could you just for the committee indicate which communities are included in the settlement?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there are a portion of 15 different communities at this point. However, as we find, the key part is the four disposal sites, the Washington County Landfill, 3M's Oakdale, Woodbury, and Cottage Grove facilities. So the contamination connected to those. That ranges from cities such as Maplewood, Oakdale, Lake Elmo, Woodbury, St. Paul Park, Newport, Cottage Grove, and then townships of Lakeland, Lakeland Shores, sorry, Athens City, West Lakeland, Denmark Township, and Prairie Island Indian Community. Hastings Well 5 is in. We have not been able to make a connection to the rest of theirs, and I believe I've gotten all the communities there. There's 15 in combined.
Members, any additional questions? Chair Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, out of curiosity, these bad actors were able to get a slap on the wrist, pollute the waters, and then the taxpayers are left to cover the 97%, possibly to 99% of the project costs. What is the recourse for taxpayers? We are woefully behind on critical infrastructure, and these problems are getting worse, only now exasperated by the problems that these companies have caused.
I'd like to take that.
So Representative Franzen, I mean, I share your, I don't want to disgust that we are in this situation. Let me say a couple of things about that. One is that the 3M settlement was, you know, vis-a-vis other states and other communities, we've done quite well, which doesn't mean that we've gotten all the money that we're going to need to build out our systems. But I will emphasize that, you know, if you look at the relative comparison, you know, our settlement, you know, close to $900 million, so, you know, roughly 8 to 9% of the total national settlement for these kinds of issues when we're maybe 1.5 to 2% of the population of the United States. So we've done okay. That said, there's a lot more work to be done. One other issue I would emphasize is that these suits can be very complex, and establishing liability can be difficult to basically, if you, you know, you find PFAS, to be able to discern, you know, who the RP or responsible party is. And I know that, you know, we can certainly make some suggestions to the legislature about how to improve our laws and give us better access to pursue these responsible parties. That's certainly a conversation we can have. The other thing I would emphasize, though, and there's no way to get around it, hundreds of billions of dollars are going to have to be spent across the country to deal with PFAS remediation. The amount of money that will be spent to deal with this issue by several times exceeds the net worth of the parties that manufacture these products. So at some level, there's a what we call just a solvency risk, meaning that, you know, we continue to push and push and push, and eventually what's going to happen is that we're going to push these actors into bankruptcy, which isn't necessarily a bad thing in and of itself, but it doesn't create more money. And so we are running up against, I think right now, solvency risks with these companies, and that is a material part of the calculation when we sit down and figure out, you know, when you're making a settlement. And so, for example, I think the state of Minnesota has done quite well by being out in advance of a lot of the other states. Right now, most states have their lawsuits tied up in South Carolina. They're not going to get paid for many years. And so not only do we get a pretty good settlement, but we've gotten our money early, which reduces the solvency risk. So none of these are great answers. Like, I don't, you know, I don't want to be in front of you and say that I've got a magic, you know, bullet that's going to provide the funding that we need. I don't. And I share your disgust that, you know, the taxpayers are largely going to have to foot a lot of these bills, which it is the reality of these, of the situation.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, just to add on what he mentioned, there is that process, and the MPCA has started 20-plus investigations to find responsible parties for many of the communities that you've heard from. It will take time because of the legal efforts that we need to do. It will take years, and unfortunately, the communities don't have years to provide drinking water, and so they have, are coming to the legislature and other locations. There's a recommendation that we do have. MPCA, Department of Health, and PFA have proposed language to allow for when the state funds something, the state would then allow for us to go, if we find a responsible party later, to cost recover that to pay back the bonds. It is language that is included in the PFA's proposal on emerging contaminants. It is one way. It's not the, the best way, as mentioned, just the time difference. They need the money now, and it may be 4 or 5 years before we can get identify and successfully litigate an RP, but it is one layer of protection that this committee could provide to taxpayers when they do individual projects.
Chair Franzen. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Kudelka, I think Chair Lee had had two bills that became law on looking at assessing the cost for the products that continue to be, could you maybe just reference the reports that the agency has done?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct. We do have a report, extensive report, that really gives tools for the legislature to devise a fee system if they would like to drive funds from those who manufacture PFAS or in their manufacturing process use PFAS. The Department of Health and MPCA outline what are the potential costs, including drinking water systems, wastewater systems, as directed by the legislature. So there's a known potential cost. And then we select different types of mechanisms based on fees, based on reporting that's happening on a national or state level that could be recouped. There are a lot of decision points there that policy will have to be made by the legislature, but we've keyed those out for the legislature if they would like to move on that roadmap.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then finally, Attorney General Larson, the litigation that was the Minnesota litigation is environmentally based, not health based. Is that correct?
Mr. Larson.
That is correct. And I think if I had a lot of time to talk to you, I could offer a more subtle answer. But the reality is that, yes, the damages theory that ultimately prevailed in that case had to do with natural resources damages as opposed to a focus on health impacts.
So I have one last question for you, Mr. Larson. Just going back to the federal settlement, is there anything that we could do proactively to figure out, you know, is there public information regarding the opt-ins or opt-out, or is this more of we have to individually ask communities as they come before the legislature for potential funding?
We made an inquiry last year to see if we could get a list, and we were told by the claims administrator that they were not willing to share that information. I will make another request. I don't know if the answer will be different now than it was before. That said, I do think realistically at this point, your best option for figuring out which communities are in and out is simply to ask them.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Larson, and thank you, Commissioner, for coming before the committee. Members, now we'll shift over to having our informational hearings on bills for the agenda for today. First, House File 204, Representative Godfrey. Members, a reminder that we have 3 to 4 minutes per bill, and so for you to keep your remarks short so that your testifiers have the opportunity to present. And Representative Godfrey, I understand that you have a A1 amendment for reference. Can you briefly describe what the A1 does?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The A1 amendment simply increases the appropriation to adjust for inflation since last the bill was introduced, and then also adds language to reflect that this is part of a phased project.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I think the last presentation really does illustrate the point that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of intervention, and this does exactly that. House File 204 is a capital investment in the stormwater management capacity of the Rice Creek Watershed District along the I-35W corridor, which cuts through my district, as you can see in this little map here, as well as several others. It also happens to be a pretty substantial vein of commerce into and through the city. With that, I am going to turn it over to my testifier here, Nick Tomchick with the Rice Creek Watershed District, who can speak a little bit more about the importance of this investment. Thank you.
Welcome, Administrator. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Lee and committee members. My name is Nick Tomchick. I am the administrator at Rice Creek Watershed District. I appreciate you considering House File 204. The problem here that we would like to address is severe flooding. This is evidenced by a 2011 rainstorm that elevated efforts to address flooding in the cities of New Brighton, St. Anthony Village, and Roseville. These are cars up to their roofs in water bobbing about. The cities support House File 204 in your packet. I think you'll see the letters of support and the city council resolutions that they've put forth. These cities petitioned Rice Creek Watershed District to address this issue. These cities are fully developed, being developed prior to modern stormwater management activity. A study, an engineer's model, was completed in the area, and similar rain events forecast I-35W covered by up to 2 feet of water. You recall the I-35W closure through the catastrophic bridge collapse over the Mississippi River. This is a loss of commerce. This is a total loss of mobility to and about the Metro Twin Cities area. The forecast flooding are located on I-35 and I-694, which carry a combined total daily average of 250,000 vehicles. Again, the engineer's model places 2 feet of water on I-35W. The solution is our House File 204, is to fund a flood hazard mitigation project, consider a regional stormwater basin, that is to replumb the cities, correct the situation. This creates floodwater storage, and later projects improve the connectivity of the flooding locations to this basin. The project creates 6.4 million cubic feet of stormwater storage at 73 Olympic-sized swimming pools of water, or 147 acre-feet of water. That's 1 foot over 147 acres. The ask that you please support House File 204, fund the I-35W Corridor Flood Mitigation Project. The project represents strategic replumbing effort to correct the sins of the past. These projects are necessarily phased to address surface water flooding. This project is phase 4 of 7. I certainly welcome any questions that the committee may have, and thank you for your attention.
Administrators, I know that this impacts multiple communities. Are they contributing financially to this project too?
Yes. Chair Lee, they have indeed. The committee, each of the cities participates collaboratively with Rice Creek Watershed District. At this point, we've contributed $1.2 million in consulting. Again, this started in 2011. It's been a long road. About $4.1 million in construction already. We have several other locations where similar projects have been established on the landscape.
Quick closing comments, Representative Godfrey.
I appreciate the time to speak to this important issue. I just would draw, again, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of intervention. And so I hope we can do this, include this in a potential bonding bill going forward so that we can address this issue heading into our cities. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 746, Chair Stevenson. After that, we have House File 333, Representative Johnson. Chair Stevenson, welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I'm just looking around for my friend from Anoka to see if she is in the room. There, over there in the corner. So I'll be joined by someone from the city of Anoka. Mr. Chair, this bill relates to a fantastic project at the Rum River Dam in historic downtown Anoka, the Halloween capital of the world and home to the state's first social district. Soon there'll be a couple more. The Rum River Dam is in need of some upgrades and work, and this is an opportunity that while we're doing that important work around safety features to add some amenities for the public to use in downtown Anoka that would be unique, not just to the region, but to the state. So you can see, first of all, that we have some safety improvements to the dam, but also the opportunity to add a pedestrian bridge that creates some key trail crossings, a new lock feature that would allow boat traffic to move from the Mississippi River, which is just about a mile or so downstream from this dam, up into the upper Rum River. And then what has caught the most public attention is a whitewater feature, a river surfing feature, and also a fish passage. That whitewater feature would be a unique thing here in Minnesota. Would give people the opportunity to do some recreation in downtown Anoka. Also would be a draw for people to come and watch and enjoy. They say for every one person that uses these features around the country, 10 people come and watch. And then the fish passage as well, which would connect the Mississippi with the Rum River, which extends up to Mille Lacs. Importantly, if you're concerned about invasive species, there are two dams on the Mississippi, the Coon Rapids Dam and then the Loxton Dams in Minneapolis that are closed, that are good Asian carp barriers. So we don't have to be worried about that with creating a fish passage here. So this is an exciting project that we'll be working on over the next few years, and hopefully we can get going this year with some assistance from this committee. And Mr. Chair, there are folks here from Anoka.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Lisa Lacoste. I'm the Public Services Administrator for the City of Anoka, and with me is Ben Nelson, our Assistant City Engineer. Representative Stevenson did a great job introducing this project to you, so at this point, if there's questions or anything that we can answer for you, we would love to be able to do that.
Members, any questions? Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. It's always good to see a dam project. Representative Stevenson, this is in Anoka, right?
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, yes.
Yeah.
Do you know who the class president was in Anoka High School in 1991?
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, we could just look that up and have research look at it. We don't have to comment it here.
Record somehow.
Yeah. Thanks for the project.
Quick closing comments, Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, thank you for consideration of this project.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 333, Representative Johnson, and then members, Chair Acum will be following that, and then Chair Vane, can I have the two following presenters move up behind the dais, please? Welcome, Representative Johnson. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present House File 333. Lot D is an exciting redevelopment project that will transform a key section of the Bayfront in the heart of my district. After years of planning, there is now a shovel-ready project that can bring significant economic and community benefits to Duluth. This request for $10.85 million in capital investment funds is critical to launching the Lot D project in 2025. These funds will be used to address essential infrastructure needs, including repairing a deteriorating seawall, clearing and demolishing outdated structures, making site improvements such as utility work, and preparation for the development. Once completed, Lot D will provide 300 hotel rooms, nearly 500 much-needed multifamily housing units, a world-class public sector research facility in partnership with the University of Minnesota Duluth, and new public gathering spaces. I believe this project represents exactly the kind of smart, forward-thinking investments our state should be making. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier, Mr. John Dukic from the City of Duluth, who will offer some additional insight into this project.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Dukic. I work on policy and government affairs for Mayor Reinert in the City of Duluth, and just like to send his apologies that he's unable to be here today. But thank you for hearing this bill, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for authoring it. And to his point that this is really a transformative project for the City of Duluth, it helps connect the Canal Park to Lincoln Park in the city. If you're not familiar with kind of the layout, if you're looking at the lake, you have the lift bridge. On one hand, Pier B Hotel and this vacant industrial lot, Lot D, just adjacent to the Pier B Hotel. Representative Johnson hit on kind of the work that needs to happen in this site to prepare it for development. The seawall is collapsing into Lake Superior, and without any additional work on that location, the soil, the contaminated soil on the site will continue to leak into the lake, and so we need to rebuild the seawall. Do some environmental remediation work to clean up the site, remove a concrete slab, and just get it ready for development. And with that development, we're looking at about $110 million investment in housing, with about $250 million to $300 million in private investment overall in the project. And so, you know, with that, we really think it's a great investment for the return on investment for the state as well as the city. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Representative Sexton.
What other contributing funds are you using? Anything from the City of Duluth? Anything federal government-wise for cleanup?
Mr. Dukic.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So we are pursuing federal funds to help with the cleanup. That we won't know for a while if those are available. But we are, as a city, contributing, you know, the match of $10.85 million to help with this effort.
Quick close of comments, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair and members. Lot D is an investment in Duluth's future. This project is ready to go. It will drive economic growth, create jobs, provide housing, and improve our connection with the waterfront. As we heard, the requested funds will unlock significant private sector development and ensure this long-planned project becomes reality. Appreciate your time and consideration and urge the committee support on House File 333. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Chair Acum, House File 1064. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity to hear House File 1064 today. We're seeking your help to make the final phase of the Panaway project a reality. This has been an ongoing effort to provide public access to our region's biggest destination, Lake Minnetonka, while also connecting numerous parks, increasing accessibility, and providing lakeshore restoration. Panaway has become a regional destination for those who wish to enjoy the lake and the final phase will ensure it has the proper infrastructure to support those visitors. With me today is Councilmember Ken Sorensen to speak more to the project, and also City Manager Jeff Dahl for any questions. So thank you.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
So thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Franson and members of the committee for hearing this bill. My name is Ken Sorensen. I'm a member of the City Council in the city of Wayzata. And we're here today to ask your assistance to help complete the Wayzata Panaway project, which has been a long time coming for our community and region to restore, protect, and enhance public access to our park system and Lake Minnetonka. Panaway and its adjacent public spaces are regionally significant assets, providing the primary public access point to Lake Minnetonka for residents and visitors, making our small little town a heavily relied upon, one-of-a-kind destination for those who wish to enjoy the lake but may not have private access to do so otherwise. This phase will also connect multiple parks and includes accessibility improvements throughout. This project is also designed with environmental restoration and sustainability at its forefront. More specifically, the city will be building a wave break to restore the lake edge, improving the quality of water that goes into the lake with updated filtration ponds, and providing community spaces for partners such as schools and the YMCA to conduct lake ecology-related programming. We are asking for your assistance to complete the project's final phase. We greatly appreciate your consideration and time to present this morning, and with me is City Manager Jeff Dahl to assist with answering any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Member. Seeing no question, quick closing comments, Chair Acomb.
I thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Just a reminder, Wayzata is a small city of under 5,000, and so this is a big lift, and it's been an incredibly popular destination with the improvements that have been done so far. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 1069, Chair Vane, and then following that, we have Representative Hemison Yeager and Representative Reen. Welcome, Chair Vane. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Lee and Chair Franson for hearing this bill today. So we are here to ask for your assistance in a new public works maintenance facility. The current facility is deteriorating and puts public works staff in harmful conditions as they try to meet the needs of the community. Chair Lee, I would like to personally thank you for coming out to visit this facility last fall, where you saw these poor conditions firsthand. Our community is working hard to provide essential public works services, but our current building is no longer a viable facility and is inhibiting essential city operations, which is why we are here asking for your assistance. With me to testify is Councilmember Tanisha Cragness and Elizabeth Haidman, City Public Works Director. It's also here to answer any questions.
Welcome, Councilmember. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I am Councilmember Tanisha Cragness. I'm here on behalf of Mayor April Graves in the City of Brooklyn Center. I am here to express our strong support for securing funding to advance the design and engineering for a new public works maintenance facility in Brooklyn Center, an investment that directly affects the safety and resilience of not only our city but the region. Our current maintenance facility has 50 years of heavy use and does not meet the demands of modern public works operations. The building has deteriorated and forces our staff to operate in conditions that are unsafe and outdated. A huge thank you goes to Chair Lee for making time to visit our facility tour last fall. You and I saw firsthand that our essential fleet vehicles, like modern snowplows, barely fit into our parking bays, forcing staff to navigate dangerous maneuvers that compromise both safety and efficiency. The structure also lacks space for critical operational upgrades, and we are forced to use shared technology spaces for lactation rooms, which demonstrate how ill-equipped the facility is to support a diverse workforce. Additionally, the facility has no room for changing infrastructure required for future fleet and equipment electrification. We live in Minnesota, where there are two seasons, winter and construction. So when the storm blows, our public work teams are first on the ground, clearing roads, restoring access, and making sure residents can get to school and to work. Nearly half of Brooklyn Center's 33,000 residents commute to work outside of the city limits. and nearly half of our workforce is essential fields like healthcare. The entire region relies on public works. Our city has exhausted our ability to adapt to the building. A 2023 facility assessment found $3.5 million in deferred maintenance costs. That still doesn't resolve the building's safety and accessibility issues. We don't want to band-aid these renovations and that will drive up costs that could potentially not even deliver the needing functionality that we need. Let's invest in the people and infrastructure to keep our community and the region thriving. I want to close with a heartfelt thank you to Representative Vang for carrying this important bill. And I finally want to thank the committee for your consideration and continued partnership.
Thank you, Councilmember. Seeing no questions, closing comments, Chair Vang.
Just want to thank the committee for the time and consideration for this bill.
Thank you. Next up, House File 1113, Representative Hemmingson Yeager. Welcome. Please proceed.
Good morning, chairs and members. Thank you very much for the time and for your consideration today. And I do want to give a special shout out. Thank you, Chair Lee, for making the trip out on a very cold day to check out this site that we'll be talking about. So this bill, I'm really proud and excited to bring forward because I think it's really a great example of collaboration and what the East Metro can do as a leading and growing community. Our population is already getting to be close to over 100,000. Woodbury continues to grow. Washington County continues to grow. So this project in particular combines city, county, as well as Metro Transit partnership to have Woodbury, Cottage Grove, Public Works, Environmental Center, a water tower, and Gold Line maintenance all in one project. The center of the project is on our Public Works building, which is kind of one of those old school buildings from like the 80s. I have Commissioner Klassen here to talk more about that. And really, it's just not where we need to be for our workforce and what we need to be to serve the needs of the community, including a garage so small for our plows that we actually have to rent space off site. So really excited about this project and happy to hand it over to my testifier.
Thank you.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Sorry. Good morning, Chair and members. Thank you for having us. My name is Michelle Klassen. I am the Washington County Commissioner. I represent District 5, the City of Woodbury. I am here to support House File 1113, which provides $10 million in state funds to develop, expand, and combine two adjacent facilities in the southeast corner of Woodbury, the Washington County Public Works South Shop and the Environmental Center. The City of Woodbury has seen strong, significant growth for decades and is currently the sixth largest city in Minnesota. As a result, both facilities are constrained and face an increase in demand of services. The South Shop in particular is already beyond capacity and does not meet ADA compliance. Half of the snowplows are currently stored off-site at a rented facility. These conditions only worsen as the area continues to develop. This project involves a multi-purpose public service campus. Washington County and the City of Woodbury have both worked collaboratively to site the new water tower near the campus, which will ensure clean and safe water delivery, which is due to the PFAS contamination we heard about earlier from Mr. Larson. This project also leverages the public-private partnership with Xcel Energy, as they have a new substation on this campus to accommodate our recent growth. This south campus also maintains the guideway of the newly opened Metro Gold Line bus operations through an agreement with Metro Transit. Minor equipment to support the Metro Gold Line will be stored at the facility to ensure roadways can be more efficiently maintained and improved regionally. Furthermore, the expansion of the existing environmental center, there is an opportunity to receive and process community yard waste, as well as enhance our reuse and repair programs, which already return over $1.5 million in estimated product value back to our community in 2024. The proposed campus project will have profound regional impacts, improving county operations and allowing the county and the city to meet the needs of our growing community. Thank you for your time and consideration. I encourage you to support the growing communities of the East Metro.
Thank you, Commissioner. Seeing no questions, closing comments.
Thanks again for the time and the attention. As you can see from your handout and from a commissioner's comments, it's really a thoughtful, comprehensive project that's really looking at what we need now and in the future for the East Metro. So thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have two bills from Representative Ream, and after that, we have Representative Clardy and Representative Vernick. So please make your way up behind the dais. Welcome, Representative Ream. Please proceed with House File 2207.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franson, and members of the House Capital Investment Committee. I am pleased to present House File 2207, the Regional City Square West Project, located in the beautiful city of Chaska. Mr. Chair, the City of Chaska is eager to work with you to complete this exciting regional project. As some of you may recall, the City Square West Regional Project combines public infrastructure improvements, public spaces, support for communities of color, assists small businesses, and improves safety between pedestrians and truck traffic in historic downtown Chaska. I also want to thank you very much, Chair Lee, for bringing the Capital Investment Committee out to tour the site a few years back. You and the members who were in attendance got to see how exciting this project is. And Mr. Chair, if you will permit it, I have with me the Mayor of Chaska, Taylor Hubbard, to describe the project further. Additionally, City Manager Matt Podrowski is here to answer any questions the committee may have.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Taylor Hubbard, and I am the mayor for the City of Chaska. With me is Matt Podrowski, Chaska City Administrator. Thank you, Co-Chair Lee, Co-Chair Franzen, and the members of the committee for this opportunity. We appreciate this committee's support of our 2023 request, which led to a partial funding of the project. Also, thank you to Representative Ream for your continued support. The City Square West project is the redevelopment of an entire block in historic downtown Chaska. This block was identified during our 2012 downtown master planning process as a key catalyst site to help revitalize this once thriving regional commercial center. When completed, City Square West will be a mixed-use project with 120 high-quality residential units. 20% will be affordable to those earning 50% median area income or less. New commercial spaces, a public paseo that is a pedestrian-friendly mid-block pathway connecting people to downtown destinations, a signature programmable public plaza that will support year-round activities and events, a Mercado that will be a new indoor farmers market, creating a hub for existing minority-owned vendors, underground public parking to support the overall business district, and upgraded adjacent city streets. The benefits of City Square West redevelopment project are many. First, it is of regional significance. The improvements will expand downtown Chaska's regional draw. The existing Chaska Curling Center and Fireman's Park demonstrate what high-quality public spaces do to attract people from the region, state, and country into our historic downtown. The City Square West block builds on this energy by creating a space for year-round programmed events such as holiday markets, concerts, and special events. Second, it is to improve pedestrian safety. The Paseo creates a safe mid-block alternative to walking along Highway 41, connecting pedestrians to destinations throughout downtown Chaska, including the connection to the Minnesota River Bluff Regional Trail, which goes to Minneapolis. Additionally, adding multifamily mixed-income housing presents an opportunity to increase housing options across various income levels. This will enhance the livability of the downtown district, creating a vibrant, walkable community that supports local businesses and attracts a diverse range of residents. Last, it will serve our growing Hispanic community. Our Hispanic population, many of whom are business owners, has increased substantially. The Mercado serves as an affordable space to celebrate and grow these businesses. Thank you again for this opportunity to be here today, and we are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to commend Representative Ream for leadership on these important projects. I think without you, your community wouldn't be as well off as it is. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, closing comments. Oh, Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Ream, for bringing this. I appreciate the impact of what you're doing on how your constituency and the population of Chaska has changed over the years with the demographics of the Latino community. These are kind of models of how other cities, other districts can come together and create large opportunities for inviting everyone to be in cultural engagement as well as a STEM for more revenue for our state. Thank you.
Close the comments, Representative Ring.
Thank you, chairs, for hearing this bill. I appreciate your consideration of House File 2207.
Thank you. Next up, we have members before you, the bill draft CG133. My understanding is the bill is going to be introduced, and so we want to make sure that we get this before us. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franson, and members for hearing this important bill for the city of Chanhassen, for a community sports center that will serve not only the city, but the broader region. Our residents have asked the city for this community space, which will provide recreational space for our residents, students of the two school districts across Chanhassen, and visitors. It will also include meeting rooms and other amenities to meet the needs of community organizations and serve as a central gathering space for residents of our community and the communities around Chanhassen. Staff and I have been working on language to make this center more sustainable by designing it with rainwater recapture and solar infrastructure so that the building is ready to meet the needs of a changing environment and reduce the long-term cost to our residents. We ask that the center is accessible to our residents with free or reduced rates of admission. And with that, I have City Manager Lori Hokkanen here to speak with us about the project.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and members of the House Capital Investment Committee for hearing this bill. I am Lori Hokkanen, the City Manager for the City of Chanhassen, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak with you today regarding our request for a much-anticipated community center. I'd also like to thank Representative Ream for authoring this bill and for her support of the city. The Chanhassen Bluffs Community Center is the direct result of extensive community engagement. Residents have made it clear Chanhassen wants a welcoming, accessible space for people of all ages to gather, connect, and thrive through recreation. Our project tagline, Every Age, Every Stage, captures this vision. The new community center will offer something for everyone, whether it's a parent with young children, an active senior, a teen athlete, or anyone simply looking for a safe place to stay healthy and connected. Some of the key amenities include a free indoor walking track for residents of all ages, promoting wellness year-round in a safe and comfortable environment, an indoor playground offering families and caregivers a place for kids to move and grow while adults build relationships, turf fields, ice, and fitness spaces, which will support physical and mental health for individuals and teams across generations. Importantly, this facility will serve not just Chanhassen, but the greater region. Already, one-third of our parks and recreation program participants come from outside of Chanhassen, demonstrating strong regional demand. Today, we're asking for your partnership in making this regional asset a reality. We are prepared to provide the local match required and have designed the project with the ability to be phased, ensuring flexibility and fiscal responsibility. Thank you again for considering our request.
Thank you. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to thank you, Representative Ream, once again, but also I wanted to say hi to Lori Hokkanen. She used to be in Plymouth. She was the deputy city manager. Chanhassen stole her. But I think it's to Chanhassen's benefit. She does a lot of great work. And it sounds like what you're doing, you're mimicking the things we did in Plymouth.
Representative Myers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, on this committee, I don't often see specifics, and I know Representative Ream had talked about it a little bit in regards to the solar energy infrastructure, either for you or the testifier. Do you have any specifics on what specifically this would cover and then how much additional the cost would be for the project?
Representative Ream.
So thank you, Representative Myers, for that question. We just want it to be solar ready, not necessarily have solar panels on it. And I think, you know, we need to look at how we can adapt to a changing environment. So I think it's in the benefit of everyone for us to design a building that will meet a changing environment.
Representative Myers. Quick closing comments, Representative Ream.
Thank you very much for hearing this bill. We really could use a gathering space in Chanhassen. I know our city manager has been working really hard to improve the quality of life for our residents, and we need more places for us to gather and have community events. And I very much appreciate you considering this bill. Thank you.
Next up, we have House File 2867, Representative Clardy. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairs Lee and Franson. I'm really excited about this bill. It's House File 2867. The amount requested is 1.76. It is specifically for pre-design and design. It's for a Mendota Heights facility, and it is basically a city hall project and a public safety hub for the police department. And I have two testifiers.
Welcome, whoever's going to go first. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and members of the committee. My name is Stephanie Levine, and I have the honor of serving as mayor of the city of Mendota Heights. I want to thank you for the opportunity to respectfully request your support to help our city replace our combined police station and city hall facility. Thanks to Representative Mary Frances Clardy for introducing this bill, as well as Representative Bianca Vernig and our partners in the Senate. She probably doesn't need an introduction, but beside me is our beloved police chief, Kelly McCarthy. A special shout out to all members who have toured our station. You are welcome to visit at any time. With all the asks you are facing, where do we fit in? I have two key points to make. Mendota Heights Police Department is a regional asset. When it comes to public safety, we definitely punch above our weight. Why? Because we have to. Our station is situated along Highway 62 between the Mendota Bridge, 55, and 35E, and just north of 494. We are 5 minutes from the airport and support an active rail line along the Mississippi River. For better or for worse, we are uniquely situated at the right place and at the right time when it comes to crime. For example, last Saturday night, we assisted the State Patrol in a chase that started in Invergrove Heights and ended up in a crash just east of our station on 62. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but the roads were safer because our officers responded quickly and effectively. The city of Mendota Heights expects residents to pay for public safety, and we do. It's half of our operating budget, and our residents are happy to do our part to support the region. However, our current facility is outdated and undersized. It was built in 1987 when safety concerns were very different than they are today and when our police department was not expected to grow to the 21 sworn officers we currently have. We also provide police services to Mendota and Lilydale. So, as a regional asset that serves northern Dakota County and western Hennepin County, we request support from the state of Minnesota. The second key point, a bonding investment will result in key partnerships that will benefit the state. With your help, our upgraded facility would allow us to serve as a regional EOC, Emergency Operations Center, which is an unmet need in the Southeast Metro. As an EOC, we would be a muster point for our county mobile field force operations. Second, we have an exciting opportunity to partner with CGIN, the Criminal Justice Network, which has identified our location as its optimal base of operations. The Criminal Justice Network, CGIN, is a unique partnership with over 40 regional law enforcement entities that enables information sharing in real time. While CGIN started in Dakota County, it has continued to expand and must leave its current home. Our project would allow CGIN to have dedicated space in its current location. We appreciate your time and consideration, and the offer stands for any one of you to take a tour and see the needs and opportunities firsthand. This kind of project is exactly what we need to invest in the future safety and of the residents and the great state of Minnesota. Thank you, and we are happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, closing comments.
First of all, thank you, committee, for coming out and seeing our project. This serves as having regional significance and support, and it's focusing on like safety and just overall service. So I appreciate your consideration. This is a phased project. So next time we'll come shovel ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Next up, House File 2924, Representative Vernig. And then after that will be House File 1530, Representative Cha. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Franzen and committee members. Before you is House File 2924, a bonding bill brought forth by the City of Mendota, a very small city in Dakota County with a population of just over 200 residents. Mendota is requesting state bonding for critical water infrastructure improvements. Mendota's existing water system was built in the 1990s to provide basic fire protection. The water is supplied by the St. Paul Regional Water Services, but the infrastructure is limited and outdated. This project includes property acquisition, pre-design, design, and construction of the water main looping and pressure reduction system.
This investment will enhance water reliability and system resilience for Mendota residents. Here with me today is the mayor of Mendota to explain the significant concerns and proposed project.
Welcome, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Brian Melke. I'm the mayor for the city, historic city of Mendota. The city has been around, predates the state, and home to Henry Sibley, our first governor. The request is for $5.2 million, which would be 75% of the total cost of $6.5 million, which the city would make up in a form of bonding. The scope of the project would be to complete a water main loop. Due to the topography of the city of Mendota, we have an incredible water pressure because the water dead ends near our park, and it triple the water pressure despite the best efforts of the pressure reducing valves. So we will complete the water main loop, bring water in a secondary way so we don't have a dead end. We will add 40 homes of our probably 60 homes, so another significant amount to opportunity to connect to our water, 14 fire hydrants, improve our roads, and add 3 pressure reducing valves. I'll stand for any questions.
So, you know, questions. Closing comments, Representative Vernick.
Thank you for your consideration of this project and of House File 2867, which you just heard. Both serve the people of 52B. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Chan, House File 1530. After that, we got Chair Zhang and then Chair Hansen. Welcome. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and Chair Franson and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing House File 1530, which requests $2 million to assist the City of Woodbury in improving the Loud Lake Park project for the entire region. This will help. This is a small comparison to the $19 million that we're going to have to put into the water tower and the $330 million that we're going to have to put into the treatment plant. So our request today is for funding for the Lala Park project in the city of Woodbury. This would include shelter, restrooms, trailhead, stormwater management, infrastructure, and natural resource and site improvements. And I would like to yield my time now to Michelle Cotta from the city of Woodbury Parks and Recs. Thanks.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and representatives for allowing the City of Woodbury to come before you today. My name is Michelle Okada, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Parks and Recreation Director for the City of Woodbury. Also, thank you to Representatives Ethan Cha and Amanda Hemmingson-Yeager for carrying this important project. We're grateful. The city is deeply committed to preserving and enhancing natural resources while fostering placemaking through our recreational spaces. La Lake Park is a 77-acre location in the southwest corner of Woodbury, bordering on the city of Newport. Because of its location directly connected to Newport and easy access from major freeways, the project has the potential to grow and continue to serve the region with benefits to recreational spaces and parkland. The La Lake Park restoration project and development aims to safeguard the park's beauty and restoring its natural resources, leading to further water improvements. Just last year, La Lake was removed from the state's impaired waters list, which is very important to us to maintain that. La Lake project also focuses on restoring and constructing equipment related to facilities to serve the community and the area residents into the future. As Representative Cha mentioned, we look to add an open-air shelter, restrooms, space for multi-generational gatherings, and enhanced trail loops and play equipment. The improvements will provide the variety of recreation opportunities and improve wildlife habitat while creating spaces for small and large groups. Therefore, on behalf of the City of Woodbury, I humbly request that you support House File 1530, which would be allocating funding for the project. The city is prepared to match the investment and continue with the preservation of these natural resources. An infographic was provided, and we are here to stand for any questions.
Thank you. Representative Perez Vega.
I don't have any questions. I just want to say I appreciate the Woodbury fireworks over the 4th of July. You guys have a pretty spectacular event. I have family in Woodbury that I attended with over the years. Thank you.
Thank you.
See, no other questions. Closing comments, Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Franzen and members of this committee. Please consider this small ask of Woodbury. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 2712. Chair Zhang. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I have a testifier joining me today. I don't know where they are, but for those of you who know, this is the tunnel that connects the SOB to the Capitol. This is a bill that was passed last biennium here in the House, but unfortunately in the Senate it didn't get done. It basically is just to make the tunnel more ADA accessible. For those of you on my side aisle, it's known as the Jungle. And then those folks on the other side, it's called the Hamel Tunnel, if I'm correct. Yeah, I see Chair Fran just making you guys on that. That's it. I don't know if my testifiers are here or Wayne, if you want to say more on this.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. David Fenley, I am the ADA Director, so the Americans with Disabilities Act Director at the Minnesota Council on Disability. This is a project that we've had our eyes on for a long time. Luckily, we all visit this project site every single day. And if you're like me, when you get to the top of that ramp, and it's a ramp, it's not a walkway, it's a pretty impressive ramp, you might or might not be out of breath. My legs don't work the same way they did when I was a kid 30 years ago. So I say this to really say that ADA accessibility is not just for the over 1 million folks in Minnesota who have disabilities. It really affects all of us. You know somebody, we might have disabilities. I have a disability. You can't see my disability. That's the case with most disabilities. We will all have a disability at some point in our lives, whether we're born with it or whether we die with one. So I'm here to tell y'all that this will benefit everybody in this room and also every single Minnesotan who deserves access to this Capitol complex. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Members, I do want to note that there is a DE1 amendment for reference for you all. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. is this part of from the new office building to the Capitol where the elevator and all that? No?
So we have the Commissioner Admin here who can answer that question. Welcome, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, Wayne Wislosky, Assistant Commissioner at Department of Administration. This is the section of the tunnel that is as you exit the Capitol building. So it's just immediately as you exit the Capitol building. So it's on the Capitol building side of the street and not connected to the state office building.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. Last year we heard a new elevator to go from the tunnel to the Capitol. Is this the same part of the project? And I thought we allocated $8.5 million for it.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scraba, it was in the bill for $8.5 million, but it was one of the bills that didn't get passed at the end of session. And it is correct that there is an elevator that would be part of this project.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Zhao.
Representative Scraba, if you remember, I said you passed in the House, but the friends on the other side couldn't get it done. For the record, former Representative Rod Hamilton had wanted to be here to testify today, too. He was here last biennium to testify, but he couldn't be here, so he sends his regards to all members.
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Young. Thank you for bringing us. This is really important and well needed, and I think the testimony that we heard today, you just never know. I needed it at one point, and I used it in a different way, and it was a challenge. And so, thank you very much for doing this, and appreciate it.
So maybe, Commissioner, this question is for you. You know, for us having to travel back and forth between the Centennial Office Building over here, is that part of the tunnel ADA compliant or not?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, that section of tunnel has the same challenges that it doesn't meet the ADA requirement, and right now we don't have a project on docket to make that. As you've probably heard, our long-term plans for Centennial Building is to demolish that building, so that would be a funding request that would come before the committee next year and be up for discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Jean, for bringing this up. My mother has been running around here since before I was born, and she would like to do so much more in her elderly age. but can't find the means to go about this because of her disability. And these are the actions that I think about amongst our capital vitality. And so thank you for bringing this up. It's sad to see they didn't go through the last session, and hopefully we can be supportive of this in District 65B. Thank you.
Chair Zhang, closing comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 1078, Chair Hansen. Please proceed, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Franson and members of the committee. House File 1078 provides grant funding for the Washington County Wood Waste and Disease Tree Utilization Program. Members, we've heard previously about emerald ash borer and the volume of trees that we're dealing with. I would invite you to come out and take a look at some of the piles of trees that are growing, if the committee would like to do that. So Washington County is looking at acquisition to deal with this part. It's going to take a multifaceted approach throughout the state. Wood waste is an issue that's out of control. And if during a break you want to come out and take a look at things, happy to facilitate that. I am joined this morning by Commissioner Bethany Cox from Washington County to talk about the county's request.
Thank you. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representatives. I am Bethany Cox, Washington County Commissioner. With me today is Mr. Caleb Johnson with our Public Health and Environment Department. Metro counties are required by the state's Metro Solid Waste Management Plan to address wood waste, which is rapidly increasing. In 2024 alone, it's estimated that over 550,000 tons of wood waste was generated from the metro area alone. Tree service costs are increasing due to this issue and are expected to only continue with the volumes of emerald ash borer waste, as the representative shared, for the foreseeable future. Brush tipping fees, so the companies are having to pay an average of 180% more than they were in 2022 here in the Twin Cities metro area, making this a more expensive process. Tree care companies and residents are out of options to manage this issue and are resorting to open air burning to handle the overwhelming volume of tree debris. That air doesn't just stay in Washington County, it becomes everyone's problem. Commissioners are hearing from our local tree companies and our constituents looking for help to do the right thing and not burn this material. This $4 million bonding request is a smart investment to develop a replicable solution to this collective problem. State funds will enable the county to purchase and develop the necessary property for a new site and establish a wood recovery program that other communities can copy across the region and the state. This new site will make the best use possible of these discarded trees that are brought by residents and tree care companies, including recovering suitable logs for lumber production and turning the unrecoverable material into biochar, which is a form of nearly pure carbon that offers beneficial uses for soil and water quality improvements. We're planning on going beyond our own county's wood waste footprint to solve this problem to protect our communities and our neighbors. But we need the state's help. Our project would handle more than 30,000 tons of wood, currently more than the 27,000 tons that our county sends to district energy, which then frees up capacity for other local communities to dispose of their wood waste at district energy. These funds will be matched with $5.5 million in local funds to build out this program. This includes equipment, services, and site development. State bonding support is needed this session because this problem cannot wait. Funds are needed now to tackle an already out of control problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives.
Thank you, Commissioner. So, Commissioner, seeing here now there's a partnership between Hennepin and Ramsey, do you expect that other metro counties will join in this effort if this was to move forward and is successful?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, the facility that we are looking for will have extra capacity for some of our neighboring communities to bring waste immediately. And then we are hoping that through some of the contracting that these communities can set up and stand a similar wood waste facility in their own communities.
Thank you. Chair Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, thank you for being here today. You had mentioned that members of the public can bring in the waste, and then you were converted into lumber and renewable fuels. For those products, will members of the public be able to access them for free, or are you charging a fee, or how does that work?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, I phone my friend, Mr. Caleb Johnson.
Welcome, Mr. Johnson. Please identify yourself and proceed to answering the question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zhang, thank you for the question. And yes, we do intend to have a public benefit from these products made. Some of the products may be procurable directly by the public, but in most cases, they'll be put to a better use that benefits the public. And specifically in the case of some of the soil amendment products we're aiming to make for the benefit of soil health and water quality, and some of the reasons we heard earlier today around water contamination from PFAS in the East Metro. So we're looking at ways with LCCMR in 2026 that we can put that product to use to clean the water locally.
Chair Hansen.
Maybe it would be those new torpedo baseball bats. Might be.
Quick closing comment, Chair Hansen.
We know we have limited funds. Any support that you can provide would be very much appreciated. I think we could be creative and innovative with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Next up, we have House File 2587, Vice Chair Frederick. Welcome, Vice Chair. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill is to try to expand the mental health capacity in the state of Minnesota. Addressing mental health challenges that we have is absolutely a public and private partnership where we need community services out there, but we also have a need as the state of Minnesota to also be able to address the challenges that exist. And so I can talk for literal hours about this need and what this project will do, but we have testifiers here for a reason, so I'd just like to kick it over to them.
So, members, I do want to note there's an A1 amendment for reference inserting $75 million. I believe that's the cost of the project. With that, we'll first go to the Attorney General and then turn over to our testifier.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And let me also thank Chair Francis as well and all members. It's so good to be with you all today. My name is Keith Ellison, and I'm the Attorney General for the state of Minnesota. I also want to acknowledge other members who were part of our Priority Missions Task Force who are here today. I see Cass County Sheriff Brian Welk today. If you all could just stand up there, Brian. It'd be good for everybody to see him. And then also Sue Ederholtz, I believe, is in the house today. If I've missed anyone, please forgive me. But it's important for me to take this opportunity to talk to you and testify in support of HF 2587 and a request for $75 million to build a new building at the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center for residential treatment facilities for direct care and treatment. I've had the privilege of serving as co-chair of the Priority Admissions Task Force and the Priority Admissions Review Panel for the past 2 years. These two entities were established by this body, the Minnesota State Legislature, to study the state's priority admissions law, also known as the 48-hour rule. First passed in 2003. This requires DHS to admit civilly committed individuals being held in jail within 48 hours of a bed becoming available in a state-operated mental health program. In 2024, the law was modified to say that a person should be moved within 48 hours of a medically appropriate bed becoming available. Over the past 2 years, a group of about 18 Minnesotans from various walks of life and various points of view came together to meet on a regular basis to evaluate the priority admissions timeline with an eye toward minimizing litigation costs for the state, maximizing capacity in and access to state-operated treatment programs, and addressing the issues confronted by people confined and the professionals who are responsible for caring for these individuals every day, people like Sheriff Welkie and Sue Ederholtz of NAMI. And people who are in these correctional institutions who are waiting to be admitted to state-operated treatment programs. In 2025, the legislature specifically asked us to include in our review the need for any further modifications of the 48-hour rule. Included in the two reports that the task force released were 15 recommendations for changes
to help ensure that the people are getting the right care at the right time in the right setting. The first and most important recommendation of both of these reports is to increase bed capacity and access to services of direct care and treatment at all levels of care to better serve the hundreds of individuals currently on the priority admissions waiting list. At the end of 2024, priority admissions were waiting on an average of 33.6 days for admissions, some much, much longer than that. The current wait list for admissions from priority admissions group patients is over 30 days. One way to increase the bed capacity is a new building on the campus of the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. Last year, the legislature funded planning money for this new 50-bed facility. HF 2587 would provide the $75 million needed for the design and construction of this building. This project will consist of the demolition of the Miller Building to complete the design, building furnishing, equipping of this new building to provide 50 new beds, and therapeutic residential treatment facilities in a supportive, secure setting. In the 2 years that the task force has met, we've reviewed data, listened to divergent points of view, brainstormed solutions, and had difficulty but respectful conversations about solutions that Minnesota needs to serve this group of people, this group of Minnesotans, including the funding needed to build this 50-bed facility in the House's capital investment bill. Would start the state down a path of serving more people compassionately, appropriately, in accordance with the law. And I can say that although we had many conversations, several of which where people didn't agree on everything, we all know that increasing capacity is critical and that leaving someone in a jail cell for long periods of time on end is no way to treat somebody in need of treatment, nor is it what our jails are designed for, nor is it what our sheriffs and deputy sheriffs are primarily designed to do. So I think this is a critical piece of the puzzle, and I think we can move a long way if we can make some progress on capacity. Thank you, Attorney General. Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Freeman. I'm the Human Service Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on this top priority for our counties and our human service directors. In 2003, the legislature enacted the Priority Admissions Law, which directs DHS to prioritize admissions of patients to state-operated programs within 48 hours who are committed to the Commissioner of Human Services and who are being admitted from county jails. As Attorney General Ellison said, the task force and review panel have been studying this, and the number one priority and the key to the unified report from the task force members was a recommendation to fund the addition of a 50-bed facility at the campus of Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center is the state's largest psychiatric hospital, overseen by DCT, Direct Care and Treatment, and DHS. It operates on a secure campus in Anoka, Minnesota, and it provides inpatient psychiatric care to adults who require treatment in a hospital setting. It's really the equivalent to an ICU for those with the highest needs of acute mental health care in Minnesota. And currently, priority admissions, those who are seeking to be admitted, are waiting an average of over 30 days. Imagine waiting 30 days for access to ICU care. Reality is that DCT does not currently operate with excess beds. There's insufficient capacity despite extensive and successful efforts by DCT to streamline processes, efficiently utilize resources, and expand transition options. Lack of access negatively impacts people and strains local resources. You have letters from members of the task force supporting this work, ranging from county human services, county sheriffs, county attorneys, NAMI, and mental health providers. While the long waiting list and waiting times for DCT experienced by people living with mental illness in jails or correctional institutions cannot be solely addressed by expanding capacity at DCT, Adding capacity at AMRTC is central to that solution. And so the review panel recommendations and the support for counties are to make this much needed investment this year, as we have looming deadlines in July regarding specific costs that will escalate for counties and changes to some of the policy around the 48 hours. Thus, it is timely to take this action this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Freeman. Members, any questions? Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frederick, for bringing this to the table. We're seeing the crucialness. I took a tour to Rush City and recognized that they were keeping folks that really were in there for mental illness, and they didn't have the capacity. I spoke with the warden, I spoke with several of the members of their staff, and saying that this was a crucial necessity for our state to focus on. So, you know, I urge other members that if you haven't had these conversations, especially with those that are being held in jail due to not having accessibility, not just as the person that's incarcerated, but also the staff of those working in those spaces of incarceration, who are drastically calling for a need of this. So just want to give kudos to you. This is a sensitive subject, and we need to be paying attention on how we can be more resourceful to those folks that are in need of mental illness. Thank you.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. And since my time here, this is my third year, and I've always, I want to work on mental health issues. And what I've seen in this state is it's unbelievable that you have to wait 30 days to get in, or however the wait time. It's not acceptable. I've listened to our law enforcement people, our doctors, our hospitals. They're all holding grounds for mental health issues, and they don't belong in any of them. They need their own facilities. So, unfortunately, we closed everything down back in the days, and I think we need to start looking at a long-term solution to these issues, because we aren't the number of people with these issues are growing, not falling, and we're making it more apparent. I know we have the child one in Moorhead and in that area. They want to build a bigger facility for young people with mental health issues. I know where I'm from, Ely, we have people from Ely that are in Moorhead and Mankato, and the parents have to travel there to see their children. It's like, again, what are we doing? How come we can't solve this? I realize this is a big, there's a lot of money. I mean, the operating cost, $245 million for roughly 350 people. You know, that's a lot of money. But at the same time, it eats up other monies that are probably, if you add that up, that number is probably way bigger than that if they went there. So I know this is like just a small part of the solution to the problem. But I think it has to, somewhere along the line, it has to tickle the big issue, because there's a lot of people in our communities and even in Rush City in the jail, which, again, I toured also. These folks deserve something, you know, maybe better help than what we're doing. So I don't know what else to tell you. I know I'm frustrated with where we are and how we keep kicking this can down it'll be okay, but it's not okay. Because if you're a family member, you have family members who are going through this, all they want is for them to have help. And this is part of the solution. So good luck. Thank you. Thank
Vice you, Chair Mr. Frederick, or Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say that we're with you 100%, Representative. We believe that this bill stops the kicking of the can down the road. Finally, we're going to make some affirmative steps. It won't be the only step. I would never even try to speak for the learned members of the committee, because you have some here. But I think some of them would tell you that we need mental health treatment in the front end. We need to get people out of DCT quicker. We need community facilities after. We need all of that. But one thing we can't escape is the capacity, and we also need people. I mean, you can build a brick and mortar, but you got to train the healthcare professionals too. So it's sort of a comprehensive thing. I see light at the end of the tunnel, because I think if we take this step, we will be making a positive step. And I want to say one other person was on the committee was a person who is a very brilliant man, professional, who was stricken with schizophrenia. And he went from being a highly, you know, high professional guy, certain tie every day in the financial world, to a person who did not have control over his faculties. He's able to recover and come back and tell us what's needed. And so we definitely had a 360 view of the problem. And so thank you for your comments as well, Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to thank Representative Frederick for bringing this bill. This is a critically important bill. It's just the fact that in our packet, the number of people lining up to support it is testament to the need for it. I also want to thank the leadership of the Attorney General for putting your capital behind it. And it really makes a difference. And also, fun fact for the committee, the Attorney General and my brother-in-law went to high school together. At University of Detroit, Jesuit. And so,
that's
anyway,
right.
He says hi.
Tell him I said go Cubs.
Vice Chair Frederick, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I kind of want to say that Representative Scrappa is just baiting me to go into the deep policy conversation about what we need to do as a state, but I promise, I know this isn't the space to do it, so happy to talk. But to sum up everything, if I were to put it in kind of a neat package, is that we have people sitting in our hospitals, in our jails across the state that need mental health care, that need to come into the state system because there's no other space for them to get the care that they need. And so, as was pointed out, it's supporting this bill, supporting what we are trying to do here is supporting law enforcement. It's supporting our counties. It's supporting the mental health community. And ultimately, it's supporting the people of Minnesota. So I would just ask for this committee's support. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. And thank you, Attorney General Ellison. And thank you, Director Freeman. And members, again, thank you all for accommodating our schedule that was packed with one big presentation and then the multiple bills. And with that, Chair Franzel will be having the gavel on Thursday, April 3rd. The meeting is adjourned.